Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon. I want to welcome you to another show. This is the American College Experience. My name is Jason Haynes. I am the host of this show and also the Chief Executive Officer of the UR Tennis Network, which is doing quite well. We appreciate all the listeners out there. We appreciate you telling other people about us. And we look forward to bringing you the kind of the untold tennis stories, those people that have good tennis information, that are good tennis coaches, but you'll never really see on TV. For one reason or the other, maybe they don't have the face for TV, maybe they don't have something going on, but these people are everyday people that put their heart and soul into tennis, and they are celebrities by their own right, and we enjoy bringing you their stories each and every week, and this week is no exception. On this week's show, we have head coach Dave Pascal. Dave is out at Emory-Riddle University, which is a great program, and we look forward to hearing from him and telling us about his national championship experience. And he'll be on here shortly. We have been having some good weeks with some good guests, and we appreciate the college coaches that have been coming in. Last week we got the surprise visit from Andy Jackson, who was the new coach there at Arkansas University, and followed up with Coach Robert Cox, who had just recently retired from the University of Arkansas, and it was a great show, and look forward to having both of those guys back on the air in the future. We've got several things happening out here in the tennis world. Number one, it is August, which means that a lot of these college coaches are getting ready. Their summer is winding up, and they're getting ready to go again into the season. And it is the individual season in the fall and the spring season in the spring and team season in the spring. And so we are excited to get these college coaches who are busy during their summer, and they're doing their best to kind of stay away from college tennis, and we phone them up and get to talk to them for a week and see what happens with all that. So we really appreciate their effort. The ITA is winding up its summer circuit season. It is the summer circuit, actually, interesting, began in 1993 and has had nearly 30,000 men and women compete in the summer circuit, which is presented by the USTA. It's a great way the USTA got involved with college tennis, and it gives these kids a chance during the summer to participate in some collegiate tournaments where there are collegiate players, and they get a chance to play singles and doubles. So the circuit remains open to anyone as long as he or she is a current ITA member, which actually means that you can pay a ITA membership dues, and then you can play. It doesn't matter your age. There are 9 regional circuits that span across the United States. They include 35 different tournaments, and the open tournaments culminate in the end with the USTA ITA National Summer Championships at Indiana University in Bloomington, Indiana on August 10th to the 13th. And the interesting thing about that is everyone's eligible to enter the National Summer Championships. You do not have to win one of the circuit tournaments to be eligible. You just have to pay the entry fee and go to the tournament and participate with it there. So The Final Sights hosted their regional action last week, and it capped off, and then it's going to be capped off with the ITA Summer Championships there at Indiana University. So the bad thing about the summer circuit is you don't get to keep up with who plays for which school, because they don't put that on there because the USTA is involved. So all you get is a bunch of names, but they got to do a better job of that, and it's not that big of a deal, I don't think, to list the school that you represent whenever you play in one of these tournaments, and let the people out there know which teams are participating in the summer circuit and which teams are being successful and which schools programs are busy during the summer. So I would suggest the ITA go to the USTA, the NCAA, and be able to put out these schools out beside these names, just so that people such as myself and everyday people that come into the ITA website, they can find out where these kids are playing at. So, listen, I think I've got Coach Dave Pascal on the air. I'm going to play a quick commercial and then bring him in, so hang on just a second.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At USSportCamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit USSportCamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike tennis camps and take your game to the next level.
Okay, we're going to bring Coach Dave Pascal in here, and if you want to talk to him or myself during the show, you can call in at 714-583-6853. Again, that's 714-583-6853. Hello, Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you just fine. I want to welcome you to today's show. I'm excited today to get to talk to you about Emory-Riddle University and your national championship. The first thing that we normally do on the show here is we've got to let people know who you are. So if you will, just take a second, introduce yourself, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, this is Dave Pascal, the men's and women's tennis coach from Emory-Riddle University down in Daytona Beach, Florida. Just finished my ninth season there at Emory-Riddle. Looking forward to starting our 10th season. Emory-Riddle's a mid-size, private school geared around aviation and aerospace engineering, a lot of our other engineering degrees. Got about 5,000 students on campus there in Daytona Beach. We have actually another sister campus out in Prescott, and then there's that has about 2,000 students, and then worldwide campuses across the entire world. About 25,000 students, and that's kind of the secret about Emory-Riddle is how big actually it is with the worldwide campuses.
And that surprises me. I had no idea that you guys had so many international campuses. I knew of the two in Florida. Are they all aeronautical campuses?
Well, I mean, we do have about 35 degree programs, even including business, just a standard BSBA. Communications degrees, human factors, but most of the worldwide stuff is continuing education in regards to aviation, and a lot of them are on Air Force bases or just military bases across the world, but anywhere they can rent a room and teach a class, they're doing it.
Oh, well, that's a pretty big place, that's for sure. Now, let's talk tennis now, Dave, and we'll come back. I want to just visit a little bit about Emory-Riddle before we get off the air today, but let's talk about this spring season that you had here. You were fortunate, and I've been fortunate myself to have almost all of the national championship coaches on the air with me, and so I'm curious here. Let's go through the season. Let's talk about your fall season. How did you start there with the 2012-2013 season?
Yeah, we, almost every year we start with the Embry-Riddle Open. It's a tournament that we host, and it's really just kind of a warm-up for the ITA regionals, which we actually have hosted all 9 years that I've been there. And we had a great ITA regionals. We had, you know, one of our top players. He won the singles. He actually beat, his name is Patrick Besch from Germany. He beat one of our other guys in the finals, Chris Freeman from California, who actually won the national singles title back in the fall of 2011. Patrick then went on to nationals and won every round there, all three rounds, winning the national title. So we've had back-to-back national singles champions. And so it was a great fall for our men's program, you know, winning our fifth individual singles national championship. Patrick also did win the doubles title for the regionals, went on and made it to the final match at nationals for the doubles, but unfortunately they came up just a little bit short, lost, I think, 4-5 to a team from AUM that won the national championship that year. That was very good, though.
Now, you're saying, you're letting us know that you participated in the National Small College Championships after your regional. Is that right?
Correct, correct. Yeah, the ITA National Small College Championships has been held for the last few years in Mobile, at the Mobile Tennis Center, and it's been a very good venue for us. We've won a lot of titles there.
Yeah, that's a great event. I really like the idea of the interdivisional play that's put forth with the tournament, and I wish they'd do more of that in the ITA. So when you got out there, your gentleman won the singles event and then made it to the national, or the Super Bowl, I guess is what we'd call it.
He did. He made it to the Super Bowl. He didn't finish the first round. That national championship match was a little over 3.5 hours, and he had actually started cramping there at the end, but actually was very fortunate and finished it off. And then when he got into that first round of the Super Bowl, he played the junior college player who won the Super Bowl, who was very good. I mean, even if I think Patrick was 100% healthy, that was going to be a tough match either way. But he pulled out. I think we were down 5-1 or 5-0. And he just could not go any longer, so he pulled out of the Super Bowl. But we've had some good success in that Super Bowl. I've had one player won it 3 years in a row and then went on to the ITA National Indoors, the Division I event, as that one wild card from the Super Bowl. And that's always been kind of a special event for us, too.
Well, you know, that is quite an honor that you got to do that. I've commented on the show here, and we've looked at the draws from the past. I'm sure that you received a draw that was full of a California school, maybe? Did you?
Or you mean for the national tournament?
What I mean is that Division I, that indoor tournament, I noticed that it's a hard tournament. I don't mean to take anything away from it, but I noticed that in looking at the draws that it seems to be that the small college people always end up with a seeded player in their first round or someone from the Pac-12.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. I have to admit, the first year we went out there, a guy that played for me named Mislav Hizak, was a very good player. He, you know, we were talking about it 2 days before we were flying out there. We were flying actually to Ohio State, and I told him, I go, I hope you get the number one seed. He goes, what? Coach, I don't want the number one seed. I'm like, it's the best time to get the number one seed is that first round when they're not expecting anything. And sure enough, he got the number one seed, the number one player in Division I. The defending champion Ryler DeHart from the University of Illinois. And
yeah.
Actually, Mislav upset him. He beat him 6-4, 6-4. And, you know, so that was a big shock to the tennis world that day when the small college NAI Embry-Riddle player beat the number one seed, number one player in NCAA Division I.
Now, we love it when the small colleges have success out at the Division I tournaments. It gives us a little more credibility, that's for sure.
yeah.
And so he went out there 3 years in a row, is that right?
He did, yep. So every year he at least picked up one or two. Yeah, I think his first year he beat Ryler. He beat Shiva Parvu from Notre Dame, and then he lost to Casey Corkery, 7-6 in the third from Stanford. His other 2 years out there, he won a round and then lost. Or actually, sorry, he lost and he won a round, then he lost again. And then the next year, he lost his first round, won a round, and then lost. And so, I mean, he picked up a win every year out there, which was you know, pretty impressive, and that, you know, it's, you know, Division I caliber tennis of ITA regional champions and most teams' number one players. And also it's a little challenging for us, the Florida teams. I mean, you know, we never play indoors. I mean, we don't play a single match indoors. And so going playing indoors is just a little different, but it is for a lot of teams.
Yeah, and so as you is that the last part of your fall season is the small college championships?
It is for us. Yeah, we save the rest of our dates for the spring, so that way we can play as many team matches in the spring to get everybody involved. Since those individual tournaments always end up being just a few guys getting all the experience, so we try to use at least 22 or 23 of our dates in the spring for dual matches.
Well, that brings an interesting question. In the NAIA division, do you have a limit on the number of matches you can play?
We do. We get 24 what are considered dates. So if we play a dual match, that would be a date. If we play a tournament where team scores aren't counted, that counts just as one, like if it's a Friday, Saturday, Sunday tournament. If we play two dual matches in one day, that only counts as one date, but we get 24, so just one less than what the NCAA teams get.
Now, you finish your fall season. Do you look at your team and say, hey, we might have a chance here?
We do. You know, I have to admit, in my 9 years there, you know, we've made it to the semifinals every year and twice to the finals, and you know, we're always kind of taking tally of where we're at and what we see the other teams. But as you know, I mean, in college tennis, I mean, so many new players come in January and that could be impact players. And to be honest, I did that. You know, I knew I was adding at least one guy in January that was going to be an impact player. And he was an impact player. He was the guy who played number two and the final match came down to. But I had actually added three new players this past January, and two of them were playing in the final match. So, I mean, you do look at it that way, but you never know what other teams or, you know, even yourself are going to, what you're really going to be like, you know, until the first day of school in January when you have all your players there.
Yeah, I know it can change that roster. So help us understand, do you have any restrictions on internationals at the NAIA level?
We don't. You know, the NAIA rules are that you have you can have up to five athletic scholarships per gender. So men can have five, women can have five. There's not a difference. You know, 98 to 99% of the schools don't have the five. I mean, even us, I mean, we're funded at the 50% level. When it comes to athletic aid now, we're able to package academic aid and need-based aid for, you know, domestic students if they qualify. But, I mean, every player at our level is always, you know, paying some money. I mean, I've never had anybody even come close to getting a full scholarship. So, you know, the NAIA just doesn't, yeah, we don't have any restrictions about how many players, and it's not even headcount. Both of them on the women's side, it's also equivalency. So it's, you know, you got your scholarship and you can break it up any way you want and have as many as you want, whoever.
That's very interesting. So when you come back in January, you know, and I'm looking at your schedule, you started at the end of January, and you started off real strong. I mean, you had a wonderful dual match record in the spring. You had one loss to Barry and then one loss to Concordia College out of New York. Tell us about Barry. What made that match? It was a 2-7 loss. What made it so difficult? Dave, are you there? Hello, Dave. Uh-oh, I think we lost him, ladies and gentlemen. He is on the road, so hopefully he'll call back here shortly, and we'll get to talk some more college tennis with Dave Pascal. You know, it's one of those technical difficulties that comes along with doing live radio, and we are broadcasting. Dave is fortunate to call us in today from a cell phone, and I know he'll call back in here shortly, and we'll be able to pick up where we left off in our conversation. So we can go back and we can talk a little bit more about some ITA tennis while he's calling back in here. And see if we can get you some information that was happening there. Sorry about the dead time. Oh, there he is. All right. We'll see if we can bring him back in. Hey. Coach Dave, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. The
Sorry
joys
about
of
that.
We were in the process of talking about your loss over at Barry. And, you know, it was only your fourth dual match of the season, so I'm going to suspect a little bit of young legs in there. But tell us about that dual match and what caused that loss to be what looks like to be your worst loss of the semester.
It was. I mean, it wasn't the worst because obviously they went 29-0 and won the Division II Nationals. But we had our chances. We were young in the sense that that day had four freshmen starting in the lineup. But we won at third doubles, we won at second doubles, and we're up 6-5 returning serve and got them down at low 40. And we ended up missing two pretty easy shots that would have gave us a 7-5 advantage to go up 3-0. Some of their players were sitting on the bench watching the doubles, and I heard them talking about, hey, guys, you know, the 2011 when we won the national title, you know, we lost four matches or something, you know, so they're talking about losing the match already. But they came back and got that set, you know, that eight-game pro set at one doubles and really gave them some momentum going into the singles. And then they really took it to us in the singles. I mean, there was some opportunities for us, but they swept the singles, and they were just better than us at that stage in the year. And then they proved it all year. So, it's been my nemesis team. I mean, I'm very good friends with Coach Samuel down at Barry, and it's the only team that I really haven't beat in the state of Florida that we play. So he's always had my number, and he still has it.
I mean, well, Coach, you had three-set matches that day, and you were, like you said, I mean, you know, you could have easily walked out of there about a 6-3 win, and then you end up walking out of there with two
sets. It was a great match, though. I mean, it was one of those matches that was just fun to be involved in because, I mean, the entire match, you're not really sure what's going to happen, and it was close. And, you know, we had leads, I think, in all three of those third sets, too, and then gave away the lead. But it was a good match for us, and it was a good learning experience. You know, I definitely like going through the season and having a loss or two because I think we learn as much from those losses as we do any wins, and we learned a lot that day about composure and staying focused and you know, not counting, you know, all of a sudden you're up 2-1 or maybe potentially 3-0 in doubles, and you know, not thinking the match is over because there's still six singles to go.
Yeah, and how about the freshmen? How did they respond from that? Did they grow up a little bit?
They did. You know, it was a growing process all year, and really, especially the two that played at Nationals. I mean, they were almost different players by the end of the season. And I mean, they're a little bit older guys in the first place, and both of them have kind of interesting stories of why they're even eligible for NAIA, because we have some very strict rules now where, you know, after you graduate high school, you only have the summer to play, and then if you're playing out there, you lose a year of eligibility. But both of those guys really, you know, embraced the hard work, and then we had some good senior leadership, you know, helping them along the way. But they really matured as the season went along.
So you travel, you have a few more dual matches, and then you get Concordia down at your place, and you end up losing that 4-5. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was a tough match. We didn't play very well in doubles that day, and you know, a little disappointing because our doubles is usually our strength and kind of set the tone for the rest of the match. And then we had just some guys. That was another one of those days where we had a couple of the young guys that didn't respond well to the adversity. No, it's also a little tough. I mean, you know, their coach had told me that they were moving the guy up all the way to number one that hadn't been playing at one. He said he'd been playing the best. And, you know, our guy beat him in like 45 minutes. I think it was 0-0 or 0-1. It might have been 1-1, but it was really easy match for us. And, you know, that was a little frustrating because, you know, I think I would have liked to see they had a guy at two, Boldereff, who's a great player. I would have really liked to see him play Zmok and then, you know, and just see what would be different with the match. You know, a little frustrating in that sense, but they got us that day. And, you know, they're always a tough team for us. I mean, they compete really hard and you know, they fight and their coach is fiery and you get them fighting. But it was a good experience for us as a team. I think we really grew from that because I think our team, after it was even done, they were kind of expecting to win that match and then they didn't. And it just goes to show you that, you know, once you get out there and lace up the shoes and start hitting balls, anything can happen. So, you know, let's make sure we grow up real quick and understand it and be able to handle that adversity when you're going through it.
So you finish out the spring season undefeated after that loss there to Concordia. You know, I'm curious, what'd you say to the kids after Concordia?
Yeah, you know, you know, all year they were talking about we were number one ranked team. We held that until something like I think a week after that loss to Concordia. And then
hey there, Coach. Hello, Coach Pascal. Are you there? Uh-oh, cutting in and out, Coach Pascal. Are you there? Well, we lost Coach Pascal again. Sorry about that. You know, it's the joy and the pain of live radio. I mean, there's not a lot going on in college tennis right now, so I don't have a lot to talk about. We get Coach Pascal back on the air here in a little bit. We'll try to keep him on the air. Hey Coach, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, very good. So we were talking about the last part of the season there, the dual matches. I mean, I'm looking at the scores here, Coach, and you had to be pretty pleased. I mean, I think the closest one you had after Concordia might have been, was it 7-2 to Midwestern? No, 6-3 to Rollins.
Rollins had a really good team. Yeah, they had a really good team, and, you know, I even felt like they played well that day, and I thought we played well. I mean, I did expect that to be a tough match. You know, Coach Borns did doing a great job there and have some real young talent. And, you know, they came in and fought us really hard. And but that was one of those matches that, you know, I told the team before it was going to be really tight. And I mean, the match was never really in doubt because we kind of dominated at some places and won. And we were up pretty fast, you know, as a team. You know, that was a good match. Yeah, and the guys just kind of really dominated. We had a couple guys really step up. I mean, we had a senior at 6, David Spinar. He went 22-0 on the season, you know, throughout the year. I mean, he lost his last match of his career in that final match against AUM. But, you know, him just stepping up, and then we had Simone Felix, who was playing 4 and 5, and those guys were undefeated through that whole time. And it was kind of, okay, if we're going to win two doubles and then we have two automatic wins, it gave the guys some other confidence to grow. But I also have to look at Denny Zmok. I mean, he lost that match against Barry, and that was his only loss of the year in singles. And so now we're sitting here looking at, like, three guys are on these undefeated, tears. And it just gave even the other guys more confidence to go for it and grow and just play versus feeling like they had the pressure that they needed to win their match.
Coach, now I look at your schedule, and I got to admit I'm a little jealous here that I don't see you traveling much.
I have to admit, it was the weirdest year. I mean, usually we at least have one or two overnight trips a year, and this was the first year that, I mean, we didn't spend one night in a hotel room until Nationals. And wow. I have to admit, you know, that's a little bit by design. I'm really a little greedy about wanting to be at home and, you know, and not be traveling so much like I used to do when I was coaching at Drake University. And you know, it was great. You know, and we have a really nice facility at Embry-Riddle. We're really blessed that they built a great the karate tennis complex back in 2004, and you know, 9 outdoor courts, great lighting with Musco lighting, and you know, electronic scoreboard, and so a lot of people enjoy coming in, you know, and playing us at our place, and so we're very fortunate. Now we'll travel a little bit more this next year, like we have 2 overnight trips. But that's the one thing that I love about Embry-Riddle, Daytona Beach, and, you know, being down in Florida, is, you know, you got a lot of just day trips. If you do travel to play some matches, you can be back home in your own bed at night. So it definitely spoils you. I couldn't go back.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's a hard place to sell. Come on down to Daytona Beach and play a dual match. So you get to the conference tournament, you get through that, you lose one match, and then you head out to Nationals. I mean, at some point during that spring season, did you say, you know what, we've got a chance here? Believe it or not, we have lost Coach Dave Pascal again on the road area. Coach, you going through some rough spots out there? What's going on?
We are in the mountains in Tennessee, driving up to Illinois to visit our families, and the mountains are winning.
They tend to do that with the cell phone. Coverage. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. So we're going to talk about the Nationals. And I was asking before you got to Nationals, did you think we've got a chance here? I mean, you've made the semifinals and the finals, but I mean, to win the Nationals, did you look around and say, you know what, we're doing some good things?
We did. I mean, I really felt like it was going to come down to the two teams. I mean, all year. I mean, you know, Vanguard was there at number 3 in the country, but I just didn't feel like they had the depth. Because most of their players, I mean, everybody was the same player that they had from last year's team, except for a new number 1 that is very good. But we thought it was between us and AUM, and it was going to be a 50-50 match. I mean, they were very good. They played a lot of the same teams that we played. The only different result was that we beat Lynn University that they lost to. But they had some great matches. They lost 5-4 to Barry, you know, so we went through Nationals. We, you know, the first round, it was kind of funny. Northwest Ohio played us unbelievable in doubles, and we kind of came out slow and sluggish, and they were up 2-1 on us after doubles. And, you know, I thought that was great because it sent some fear into our players. And, you know, a couple of the guys who weren't playing and our trainer were panicking, and I say, well, you just watch. I think they just woke up to, you know, a giant, because I go, I think some of our guys are going to respond really quick. And we had 2 guys both win their matches in under an hour, and then we won all the first sets, and you could just sense that sense of urgency. So that was great. And then the other matches, I was surprised that we kind of cruised through it easy, especially Westmont in the semifinals. I knew they were very good in doubles, but I think our guys were ready then. By after having 3 matches under our belt, I mean 2 matches, I'm sorry, under our belt, I could just sense they were ready. Like, let's get to the finals and let's have the battle. And, you know, we beat Westmont 5-0, which was kind of a shocker for me. They're a very good team, well coached, has some very talented players. And so that was actually a blessing for us, because we were done with that match in like about 2.5 hours, where AUM battled with Vanguard for about 3.5. And then we got to the final match with AUM.
Yeah, and let's talk about that final, because we had Coach Vargas on here earlier in the summer, and he was a little upset that he lost that final.
Well, I read a quote from him about, you know, if there was ever ties in tennis, that should have been that. And I have to admit, I'd almost agree with him, because I've been on the other end of those matches. And, you know, I definitely felt for them, because, I mean, their guys played a great match, and it was a clean match, and they fought hard. And, you know, and they did everything they could, and you know, it's just somebody's got to lose at the end of the day. But obviously, we were pretty excited about winning, and you know, especially winning our first title. But I have to admit, you know, I've been involved with college tennis for over 20 years, and I've never been a part of a match the entire time we were never winning, and then we win it in the last, you know, 2 minutes, and we win the match, and so we were fighting from behind the entire time, and because I mean we started out in doubles, and we knew it was going to be very tough for us at three doubles. They were undefeated on the season, and they had their best player in singles down at third doubles, and he can kind of take over a match and dominate. And so they did. They won pretty easy there. But what shocked us was our one doubles team hadn't lost a match all year. They're number one doubles team in the country, and their guys just had one of those matches. I think it was, you know, the match for them of the year, and they beat our top team. And then what was shocking is our two doubles team, they were actually down. They were down 40-30. And the other team was serving for it at 7-6. And then one of their players hit five faults in a row. And
oh,
then
my
he
God.
Gave us a, yeah, so he had match point at 40-30, 7-6, and he double-faulted, then he double-faulted again, and then he missed his first serve, and then he gave us a little melon, and our guy came in and crushed it. And once we broke, I kind of knew that we had it, but they really tightened up. And so we snuck that one out, and that was everything. If we're down 3-0, I don't think, you know, we're winning that match. And then, you know, what was great, though, is that energy from that doubles transferred over into singles and really gave us a sense of urgency. But what my thing was is I really felt like we have to win four or five of the first sets. And we really cruised at five, at three, and at two and won those sets. But we lost the first set in a real tough one at 1-6. But those were going to be tough matchups for us. Then we're playing at number four, and we're actually up 5-2 in the first set. And I'm thinking, okay, there's our fourth one. You know, we're going to send a message that we got four of the first set, so somebody's going to have to win it in the three-setter. But their guy came back, and our guy kind of tightened up, and he lost it 6-4, so he lost the next four games. And so as the match went along, we were down 2-1 after doubles. One of our guys wins a match 2-2, but, you know, we've lost those first three sets, so we're still behind. Their guy wins at 6, 4-1. Now it's 3-2 to them. Our guy at 3 wins pretty easily, 3-3. It's 3 all, but their guy at 1 is about to clinch the match 6-1 in the second after winning the real tough first set 7-5, which was a rematch of the national champion singles match between Besh and their guy Nico. So now they're up 4-3, and now it's down to 2-4 singles, which are both freshmen for me. Those are the freshmen that I brought in just in January. Our guy at 4 singles was up 5-2 in the second set, again, just like he was in the first. Their guy gets it back to 5-4, but our guy ended up holding serve and won the set 6-4. Then he goes up 5-2 again in the third set, lets the guy come back 5-3, 5-4, but now it's on serve, and he played the game of his life. I mean, he hit three winners, and then he hit one ball so hard the guy couldn't return it, and he clinched, you know, he clinched that last the fourth point for us. So that's 4-4. Came down to our number two singles player, Denis Mok, a freshman from Croatia. He won the first set 6-4. He got broke at 4-all for the other guy to go up 5-4. Tim Hewitt was their player. He held serve 6-4. It goes into the third set. We actually had a lead in the third set. He was up a break 3-1. And then Tim just got on fire, and so much so that Tim was actually serving for the match at 5-4 and had his first match point. Our guy played a really good point, came in on his backhand. He hit the backhand passing shot down the line. I thought it was going in, but it was about a foot wide, and he missed it. And that was his first point. They ended up going all the way to 6-all and playing in the tiebreaker. Our guy goes up 3-1, plays a tremendous point. I mean, our whole goal was to get in behind his forehand or chipping to his, you know, behind my guy's forehand, hitting inside out to Hewitt's backhand or chipping and coming in, comes in perfectly behind an inside out forehand, and the guy hits a floater slice, and our guy hits it and couldn't have been more than an inch out, but the official agreed, and it could have been 4-1 there, but it's 3-2, and they go all the way to 5-5. Their guy wins the points, so now he's got second national championship point at 6-5. Our guy comes in again, but hits a great volley cross court to win the point, 6-6. They get another national championship point, three national championship points now. Our guy once again attacked and off of a serve, and fought that off. Then he hit a great serve and played a good point. Their guy was serving. Now it's our first national championship point at 8-7. And one of the things that my guy had been telling me the whole time, and I was just agreeing with him, and it's, you know, just one of those instances where as a coach you just kind of learn also from your players. He's like, Coach, if I ever get that one point, if I get that one shot, I want him to have an answer. And we knew exactly what that meant. The guy hit a big serve. He just hit the backhand to the middle of the court. He hit it back to Denny's backhand. He chipped it over to the backhand side. And you know, I was waiting to hear him coming in. I mean, he's a big guy, 6'3", about 215 pounds, looks like a outside linebacker. And I thought I'd be hearing his footsteps coming in, and I don't. So then I turned to look at him, and I could see he delayed it, and now he's doing a full sprint to the net. And I never even saw the other guy hit the ball, and I looked back and the ball hit in the net, and kind of in disbelief. And he yells and screams and comes over, basically picks me up and gives me a hug, you know, and then we had won our first national championship at Embry-Riddle.
Yeah, first ever in the school of history, and did it over a solid program, Coach. I mean, Auburn-Montgomery for years has been at the top of the NAIA level.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's actually been our nemesis team that we've never been able to get through to win that title. So it kind of felt good that it was against them, and then you felt like you earned it because they are a premier program.
I bet. Now, Coach, I got to ask, how long did you get to enjoy the national championship?
Yeah, I feel like I'm on my way right now to finally celebrate it.
Okay.
I'm going up to visit family. I've been unfortunately, I did seven camps this summer and been doing a little bit of recruiting, and so I'm looking forward to this 2 weeks up here and kind of celebrate it. But then also we're having a great reception. We have our student athlete convocation every fall for all the athletes, and they're actually bringing back all the players from the national championship team. We're going to get our rings that day, and then the whole convocation is going to be about the national championships. And what I love about it is they're going to have one of our former players who played in the match, and then we're our seniors. They're going to have them talk about the match instead of me as the coach, because I told him, I asked him to do that because I was pretty excited about hearing a player's perspective and now a former alum. And then we're going to have lunch the next day with the president of the university. And just I think we're going to do a lot more of our celebrating this fall with it, because you know, as soon as they got back, they were all leaving to go home, you know, because school was out. And so we got about 2 days together, and then they were gone. So, you know, it'll be a long time before I stop celebrating this, though.
Yeah, well, I hope so, Coach, because those don't come along real often, and they're very special when you get them.
Yep.
So,
I agree.
Let's see. So what do you have to do with your team? How many players did you lose, and how many did you have to replace?
Yeah, we lost our number three singles player and our six. You know, obviously our three, he was a national singles champion in 2011, played number one his first 2 years that he played for us. This last year, he played, you know, anywhere one, two, and three. He's going to be tough to replace. I mean, he was an exceptional player. Chris Freeman out of Costa Mesa, California, played his first year at Wisconsin, but then transferred to Embry-Riddle just because he wanted to become a pilot. You know, it's the best place in the world to become a pilot. And
great. Yep.
And so, he's gonna be a tough one to replace. But you know, usually like a guy like that, you really don't replace him. You got to have somebody else that's already been here that's got to step up and take his place. And then we lost our number six player, who had a great year for us and was instrumental. But we felt like we had a guy at seven that, you know, I debated. He was also a freshman from Spain that is very good. I mean, when he was 12 and 13, he won the national championship in Spain. And so I thought he could, you know, but he was a true freshman. He was 18. He was just adjusting to college. So his adjustment didn't go as fast as the others. But I'm really expecting great things from him this year because I think he'll be much more comfortable. He'll know what to expect. He knows what to expect from me as a coach. And then we have one new player that's coming in, Luke DeCaris from Trinidad and Tobago, was the number one junior down there when he was in the 18s. Very talented player, kind of a smaller guy, but very fast, huge forehand. I think he's going to make an impact right away too. So we have everybody else back though. You know, we have our one, our two, our four, our five, our seven, all back. So, you know, I think we'll have a chance to make another run at it, you know, but obviously it'll be, you know, how hard they want to work and what they're willing to kind of sacrifice a little bit this year. We got to find some new doubles teams. That'll be one of the interesting things, but, you know, singles wise, I think we're in pretty good shape.
Coach, it kind of sounds like that somebody was planning on making a run at several national titles here.
Yeah, we'd like to. I mean, you know, that's one great thing about Embry-Riddle is, you know, it's a great place to recruit. And, you know, if I ever get a recruit to come visit and see the university, it's a beautiful campus. I mean, it's unbelievable how many new buildings are going up. It's a growing campus, great facilities. You know, it sells itself. If I get them to come and look at the school, visit it, hang out with the team, get to know the guys, it's pretty easy to get them to come, even though they got to pay some money. But it's like taking a nice vacation, you know. You're willing to pay a little extra to have a really nice vacation.
Yeah. Oh. Well, and you know, Coach, we haven't talked about it at all, but you do pull double duty here. You do coach the women as well, and you had a great season there.
Yeah, actually, I was really impressed with our women this year, maybe as any. I mean, I know 2 years ago we got to the finals, and we lost in the finals to AUM, and that was the best team I had ever had at Embry-Riddle. But I was really proud of the girls this year. We didn't have near the talent, but we just had some girls who really worked hard and grew so much over the year. And then, you know, we got to Nationals. We were the ninth seed at Nationals, and we got to play in the second round. We got to play Westmont, the eighth seed, who were the GSAC winners. So the Golden State Athletic Conference out in California, they went undefeated in that conference and won it. And our girls dominated that match. It was real impressive. And you know, we won that match. And then we played Xavier, the number one seed, in the next round. We were up 2-1 after doubles. Won another match. We ended up losing 5-3, but we gave them a scare, and you know, it was a great year, and I'm real excited because I got every girl coming back. We've got two new girls coming in that are going to be, you know, probably top four or five players for sure, and so it's exciting for our women's team. I think we're going to have a good opportunity this year.
Very good, Coach. Now, I've got a couple of questions here that I tend to ask my guests, I'm curious just in your personal thoughts on this. And as a college tennis coach, I knew I kept up with American tennis, professional tennis, just whatever was out there. And I'm curious, as you watch things in Florida with respect to your program and such, how do you feel that American tennis is doing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the Florida, like, I mean, I could just probably speak with, like, the Florida kids and going out there to the tournaments and watching and everything else. And you know, I think, you know, the talent is there. You know, one of the things that, you know, I really tried when I first got down there to recruit a lot of the Florida kids, but it just didn't seem like, you know, the NEI, you know, brand and a little bit with Embry-Riddle, limited degrees, you know, I didn't have hardly any interest. And then I had such quality candidates that were international. But I was really thinking, you know, I'm down here in Florida. I could make a national championship team just out of Florida kids. But then I got the rude awakening that the ones that I wanted didn't have any interest. And so it's been a little bit of a struggle, and I'm always still working on it, always trying to find the right ones and ones that Embry-Riddle fits and then also works financially. But, you know, the one thing I would say about it, though, is I would just like to see the kids out playing more matches, playing more practice sets. and not drilling and not doing so much one-on-one work with just a coach who's maybe feeding balls and you know, that. I think that's a good thing to help, but then they just need to go out and play sets, you know, whether they're just betting a soda, they're betting, you know, something with a friend that then they're going to go to war and just learn how to play each other and win and you know, play tournaments. There's a little bit too much, in my opinion, of, like, they protect things, you know, maybe protect their ranking, protect their ego, and not, you know, you go out and practice with somebody and all you want to do is rhythms and, you know, play a few groundstroke games and take some serves and then you're done, versus, you know, warm up for 10 minutes and then let's play some sets and then try to work on doing some different experimenting with sets, whether it's serving the volley, chipping and charging, whatever, and not worry about scores and let go of that ego and, you know, those things. So, you know, just a personal opinion, but, you know, I definitely would like to see more match play.
Well, there is it bodes well. I've been working privately at a country club over here recently, and, gosh, all we do is drill. I mean, that is it. Mm. And we spend a lot of hours drilling, and very much of the time is spent on that, and very few minutes are spent in actually playing tennis. And, you know, I agree. I think that hurts the American junior. I don't think that it's making us a very competitive in the international market. I think that what we're seeing is, just like you say, a lot of protection that's going on with the kids, and there's not a lot of competition that's going on. Do you think that when you look at a professional versus amateur and you kind of in between there in the college ranks, but when you look at the American players that we're putting out there, what do you think, Coach? What are we missing? Is it just match players or something else?
No, I mean, I do. I think that's it, though. I mean, I agree with you 100%. Like, you know, there's so many of those clinics, so many of the things that, I mean, if you look at the kids, man, they have the talent. They've got the strokes. They have the size, the speed. I mean, some of these kids that I get to go watch, I'm just like, oh, my goodness, how good does this guy look? He looks like a tennis player. He carries himself. But then when they actually start playing, they look like a different player. You know, it looks tight. It looks, you know, not freed up. You know, not loose. Not that loose arm. You know, to where, you know, I've been in this situation so many times. I know I have to go after this or, you know, perform. Versus, you know, all of a sudden, you know, you look one way when you're hitting rhythms cross court, and then all of a sudden that arm tightens up tremendously when there's pressure under it. And I think there's nothing better than, you know, pressure practice. And whether it's, you know, okay, you got to hit 10 serves in a row, you know, as one of the players or the whole team runs, you know, and has to do sprints. And just, you know, anything under pressure is a good thing, because then when you're out there, you're like, hey, I've been through this. You know, I know at the end of the day, you know, it's not going to change who I am, whatever else, but I'm a little free whip, you know, free swinging out here. And learning how to play, you know, it's like, even like I tell my players, like in the summer, they'll ask me about, hey, should I go play some futures qualifiers and all that stuff? And I always tell them, no. I go, here's what I want you to do. I want you to go play men's opens. And I hope you run into a guy who's about 35, 40 years old. And all he does is slice on both sides, but he's tremendously good at it. And you got to learn how to beat that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those matches are so tough because it's unique. And I like them to learn how to win.
Yeah. Coach, being there in Florida, we're big supporters of minority tennis around here, and what we're discovering is that these populations are starting to give back to the sport of tennis, and we're starting to see some good things come out of them. Do you get that same feeling there in Florida?
Yeah, we actually host one of the USTA multicultural events on our campus, man, some of the talent there, and then even within my own tennis camps, the Bedford Foundation sponsors several of them, and we work with the Derbyshire Park program, and some of the kids there are just really talented, and then they're having a little bit of a passion for it. So, you know, that's why we're helping them out too. You know, I'm excited about it too, because we just got to look for, you know, every, you know, diamond out there and try to get them into the sport of tennis, which is a great lifetime sport, and, you know, hopefully maybe find some major talent, too.
And so it sounds like that you run a pretty good program there where you reach out to the community with your tennis and your tennis players, Coach.
Yeah, I mean, we do, between the two teams, we do probably about 400 hours of community service in the Daytona Beach community. Some of it involves, tennis, and we work with the USTA since the Florida USTA is right here in town out of the LPGA facility. And then we have a lady in town named Rita Gladstone who does a lot of work with just a ton of different juniors. She developed a middle school program that was great that we work with, and then just also with some of the need-based programs around here and offering them some tennis and some tennis, with our tennis camps and some clinics and some pro-ams.
Exactly. Well, Coach, we've had a wonderful day today, and I'm really excited for you winning your first national championship. And so when do you get started with your fall schedule? I mean, when do you start your fall season?
We start school August 26th, and we'll start our first official practice on Labor Day. I feel like that's a great day to start.
That is a pretty good day to start, Coach. Well, now, if someone has listened to the program and they want to get in touch with you through the email, would you mind giving out your email address?
Oh, sure. Yeah, and obviously they can always, ours are all posted online, but it's just my name, David, and then dot, and then Pascal, which is Pascal, and then at erau.edu.
So are you done recruiting for the season, Coach?
Never. You never know. I've got two seniors on the men's side, two seniors on the women, and you never know what you can bring in January, and you got their money opening up, and, we're always looking to add some new surprise.
Oh, very good. Well, Coach, I appreciate you coming on the air today. I'm glad that we got to talk, and hopefully in the future you'll agree to come back on.
You bet. Thank you for having me. Appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the great day, Coach, and have a wonderful trip.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Coach Dave Pascal. Dave is the coach at Emory-Riddle University out in Daytona Beach, Florida, and he's the proud owner of his first national championship for the school. He did that with the men this year. And he is that program is very strong in the NAIA division and other divisions as well. They do play other divisions, but they represent the NAIA division, and they do it very well, making the playoffs, advancing in the playoffs, and now winning the whole championship. And so we're very excited that he was able to come on the air today and talk, and we look forward to him coming back, and I want to thank you today for listening, and I hope that you enjoyed the show. We'll be back again next week with another episode of the American College Experience. So thanks so much, and have a great day.